That was something else, wasn't it? Huh? What do you think? Thank you, guys. That was awesome. That was what an amazing night to be here with family. There's some tears. That was powerful. That was really strong. Let me grab something here, and I'm just blessed to be here. My name's Ramsey. I'm a member of the Rock Church. Welcome here. Got my bag. No, Mac, I'm not moving in. I was wondering why Mac wanted me to share tonight, you know, and boy, seeing all those signs, yeah, he must have known that I've wore a lot of those signs in my life, you know, and thank God and Jesus I don't wear them today, you know, a lot of them, and we're going to talk a little more about that. That was, I mean, how do you follow up on that? I don't know. We had the harmonica, you know, we had a harmonica here tonight, a baptism. I mean, what? This is something else here. You know, I got a few notes here. I got the Bible. You guys are familiar with the Bible? I got a little reflection here. Also, I brought a friend tonight, and that's what this chair is for. This is who it's about. That's it's Jesus. And that there, Jesus, that was my childhood savior, kind of like the play went. I had Jesus in my life, and I didn't really even know it as a small child. That was an image of Jesus that was on my dresser. A little bit about the physical image of Jesus there. That Jesus is about 110 years old. It was my great-grandmother's. It was brought over in 1900 on a ship from Europe, from Czechoslovakia, but it was just Slovakia. It wasn't Czech yet. It was just Eastern Europe. And she was migrating, a single lady migrating to the United States in 1900, and she brought that image of Jesus with her to America. And it must have brought comfort to her. And she married an alcoholic. My great-grandfather was an alcoholic. My mom was raised by her grandmother and her grandfather. My mother must have found a lot of comfort in that, because my grandmother at an early age gave that image of Jesus to my mom. My mom, at 8 years old, found her grandfather hung in the basement from alcoholism. And my mother ended up marrying, he wouldn't call himself an alcoholic, but he was a heavy drinker, let's put it that way. And he would be violent when he drank. And I remember as a small child, many a nights it was just me and that image on my dresser, and I remember holding this image of Jesus many, many, many nights. Well, the insanity of that addictive life, that insanity of that chaos was happening outside my door of my bedroom. And I didn't, you know, I forgot about that Jesus for a long, long time. But it did bring me comfort, and it says right in the Bible. And Jesus said this in John 16:33, I have told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart because I have overcome the world. That explains it. That explains, as a small child, where that image, that Jesus in our family's line, brought comfort to us. Jesus had overcome the world. But like the skit that was just performed so beautifully here, I left Jesus. I left Jesus for the world for a long, long time. Who was I? I was a party animal. I found alcohol at the age of 13 and drugs shortly thereafter. And the insanity that was going on in here and going on out there was kind of obliterated for a while. I was rebellious. I was very independent. I was so independent that at an early age, no one could reason with me. No one could talk to me. Oh, boy. I had a double life. A lot of alcoholics and addicts do that. We live a double life. We want to look good on the outside here, but we feel terrible on the inside. And so I did a lot of the things that everybody else would do. I fell in love. I thought I knew what love was. I got married. I had a son. I worked, I bought a business, I did all those kinds of things while I was still dying inside. I was still drinking, I was still drugging, I was doing all these things. I ended up just like she did, a lost and lone, you know. I really, to put it mildly, I mean, I was absolutely insane. I was caught by addiction. I was caught by self-denial. I was caught by selfishness. I'll give you a little example of that. You know, when I finally started to look at myself and get into rehab and face the truth, and when my family found out who I was, all the cards collapsed, I was a Sunday relapser, okay? And I would relapse on Sundays almost every time, because what would happen is for the weekend I'd get my son, and I tried. I didn't want to use anymore. I didn't want to be that person anymore, but I was powerless over that. But I'd get him, and we'd have a wonderful time, and I would pray that it was going to be okay. I would pray, but I wasn't praying with my heart. I was praying with Ramsey. I was denying that God could help me. I was still trying to fix it myself. And one particular day, I don't know if you know this or not, but it was a Father's Day, and I remember you gave me a card, and it had all kinds of things that you were proud of me and that you loved me and that you cared. But every time I would drop you off at your mom's house on Sunday, all that guilt and all that shame and all that filth of who I was would come boiling to the surface. And I remember having that card sitting on the seat of my pickup truck and dropping you off and knowing I was going to go use one more time, knowing I was going back one more time. And this is... Don't forget, this is after 30 years of this lifestyle, and I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I would read the card. I'd be at a stoplight, and I was going to do it for you, Dan, and then they would hit me again, and it went on. I must have made 30 U-turns, going to the drug house, going home, going to the drug house and going home, and the drugs won out. I had to take that card and crumple it up and stuff it under the seat so I could make it to where I needed to go. So I knew that I needed God to get sober. I got into rehab, I got into AA, and I got sober, and I ended up here. But there's one thing there was still a hole, a gap missing, you know, and that's because I didn't know who God was. I had, in AA and in recovery, God's such a foreign concept to people that they give us what we call a higher power, and we kind of do steps, and they kind of let us do what we create an image of God, a God of our own conception, okay? And that worked for a while, but it's intended that you grow in your relationship with God. And so you end up asking, you know, who is God? And the God that a liar, a cheat, a drug addict, an alcoholic, a hypocrite could create isn't the God that we want, is it? I don't think so. And so that's why the hole, that's why there's still something missing, you know, because who is God? God is perfect, and that's, God is a fortress. That's the God I need. God is a rock. It says in Psalms 18:30, it says, the ways of God are without fault. That says it all. That's God. That God is God. Ramsey cannot make up the image of God. Ramsey needs to find himself in God. So, you know, that's when I walked through the doors of the Rock Church. I was in a search still. I had gotten some sobriety. I had gotten some things back in life. Things, you know, but there's still something missing. There's a hole still to be filled. And that's a relationship with God, the true God, the God that is not a politician. I mean, wouldn't that be convenient if, you know, we could walk down the street and or just go along our lives and kind of make God say, well, no, his standards could be a little lower today because I'm really not really that good today. Or, you know, God has to be a sovereign God. He is God. He's not up to me to make up. God is God, and I need to come to grips with that. That's a hard truth to come to when you're an addict or alcoholic or just a normie. An earth person, as we call you guys, you know, it's a hard concept to come to because we want God to be soft. We want him to be flexible, you know, because we are sinners. That's what Ramsey ended up being. I said it. I ended up being a sinner. I understood that finally when I started coming to this church. And I'll tell you, if you're new here, that's not an easy thing. You know, it's a true thing, but it's not an easy thing. And if I hadn't gone through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I hadn't gone through the steps of recovery, I probably would have turned tail the first night and run. But something made me kept coming back to find truth, finally to find truth. So that brings us to this sin problem, and I like to call it the Grand Canyon of sin. You know, it is a huge gap between this God who is perfect and Ramsey over here who is a sinner. It's huge. It's unbelievable. I had never really looked at it before, but in recovery, again, and this is where we have some of the advantages, we do something called a moral inventory of ourselves. And boy, you start doing that honestly, and you're going to have a gap between you and a perfect God. And you see, the problem is that, and then what's hard for people to explain is that gap, that how big that is, and that you created it, that I created it. It's kind of like, let's say there's some people coming from the south, coming through Mexico or Arizona, going north, and that they're just traveling north, and they send a scout on ahead, and he's a couple days ride ahead of them, and he's riding off by himself, and all of a sudden, anybody ever see the Grand Canyon? You've been to the Grand Canyon, seen pictures of it? It's immaculate. It's huge. Could you imagine this first guy coming up from Mexico, coming up through Arizona, and then all of a sudden, he's just riding along, and there it is. He's just looking across this huge, nothing like they've ever seen coming through their travels. And he's witnessed it. He's seen it. He's stood on the edge of it. He knows how immense and how huge it is. And now he has to ride back a couple days and tell some guys who are just kicking it at camp. You know, how would that be? He comes riding into camp and he says, "There's a huge, huge canyon ahead of us. We're not going to make it across." And these guys would be just sitting back at the campfire saying, "What you chilling? You know, we've come through some gullies. There are some ravines and stuff. We got some rope. You know, don't we got like 40 foot of rope? We're good." You know, you just, the same thing with this sin problem. You just can't, until you witness it, until you walk up to it and see it, you don't know what it's like. Until you get into the Word of God in the Bible, and you come to church and you see people and you see brothers and sisters who have walked to the edge of that sin problem, you don't realize how big it is. We're going to trivialize it, and especially the addict and the alcoholic. We're going to deny it's ever there. We're going to turn away and say, "That's not a big deal," or "I'll deal with that tomorrow or later." We're just going to turn our back on it. But when I started coming here, I started to see the sin problem I created. And you know what? Why we turn away from that the most? Why? There's a four-letter word that starts with an F. It's fear. We will turn away from sin because of fear. And that's the fear of God. That's the fear. On my worst, worst day, if I was going to hell and the penalty for death or for sin is death, and if I'm going to eternal hell, which I've heard here, and it scared the living daylights out of me, I thought back to my addiction days, and the worst, worst day of my life was the day that Daniel's mom and him walked out of the house forever. And I went insane, absolutely insane. And if hell was going to be anything like that for eternity, I really didn't want any part of it. And I better do something about this sin problem. Fear is a horrible thing to face on your own, especially that fear. Going back to the Grand Canyon, I had a couple of friends that never been to the Grand Canyon, never seen. I love the Grand Canyon. I've camped on the south rim. I've camped on the north rim. I've rafted down the middle of it. I love the Grand Canyon. I don't know. I just love it there. And I had a couple of friends that never been there before, and I got to take them for the first time. And it's kind of like, stay with me now, because it's kind of like when I got here and how excited like people like Mac are and the other people of this church to take people to the solution to that gap, to that problem. So I got to take these people to the Grand Canyon for the very first time. And we got there, and we're doing the North Rim, walking along the rim. And I've seen this point sticking way out in the middle. I mean, it's over the fence, And it's kind of this little narrow gap, and it's 2,000 or 3,000 feet straight down on either side of it. It's like a little peninsula. And I thought, you know, that's how you got to see the Grand Canyon. You got to climb this fence, and you got to walk out on that edge. You know, that's how you see the Grand Canyon. And one of the friends, like, probably had the same mental capacity I do. Sure, that's how we do it. And we hopped the fence, and we climbed out over, and we walked down on this rock, and we got to the very edge of the canyon, and we're standing there, and, oh, this is how you see the Grand Canyon. But our third friend, there is no way that she was ever going to come out there. So we got back, and we're all excited. This is, yeah, yeah, that's how you see the Grand Canyon. That's how you really experience this. And she said, boy, I'm just too afraid to do that, but if you guys interlock your arms with me, that way if I fall, we're all going to fall, I'll do it. And I said, yeah, we'll do that. So the three of us, and boy, I'll tell you what, I lost circulation. They almost had to amputate this arm because she was just, oh! And we took her all the way out to the edge, and she stood there, and we all stood there. And she never probably, and that is one of the experiences that she'll have for the rest of her life. So that's the same thing with this sin problem, with this Grand Canyon of sin that we have. You do not want to face it alone. And when I got here to the rock, there was brothers and sisters that had a solution. See, to them, it's not the same problem because they know there's a solution. See, it's a different, totally a different perspective from somebody like me just walking in and seeing this huge hole of sin and eternal death. And for them to take me to the edge to really claim it as mine, that is me. I created this gap between you and God. I created it, God. It's mine. I own it. I'm going to take possession of it. And then for them to take me to the edge because they know there's a solution. And that solution is Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the bridge. He is the solution. He's what gets me from over here, alone and lost, to God over there. He's the bridge across that canyon. And it says in John 3:16, and we all know this one, and it's as plain as this, for God loved the world so much that he gave his only son that everyone who believes in him will not perish, but he have eternal life. Now that sounds like a bridge, right? Sounds like a solution to the problem that I created in my life and you've created in your lives. You know, I thank God for letting me stand here today and share the solution with you. And there's some of you who've probably not heard this before, or maybe you have, and it took me a while. It took me 6-8 weeks before I finally, and wasn't going to do it, because you always say that. They always say after they share the gospel or something, if there's anybody here, just lean over and touch somebody or talk to one of us afterwards. And Steele was here. And I was just going to kind of ask some questions with him, right? And kind of the next thing I know, God's taking me by the hand and Steele's locking his arm around me, and we're going into the green room to pray. And so this is a pretty special area for me because I got saved in the green room. I got baptized here. The band of brothers, I spent the night there and really felt a part of the manhood. And now I'm standing. I mean, this is, and you know what? It's not the building. It's not this area, but it's Jesus is present. And that's the truth. I'm going to read, you know, I do a little meditation and I do a little prayer and I do a little time with God and the Word every morning. And I have this Grace for the Moment book. And kind of Mac, he asked me to come to the rehearsal and kind of tie everything together. And then God's done us one better because in today's Grace for the Moment reflection, I mean, it's December 18th, right? We got that. You guys want to hear this? What it says, this brings God to the now. You know, what happened 2,000 years ago was that Jesus was born, God's plan for our salvation. That's when heaven met earth. See, that was God's plan all along. He knew Jesus was going to be coming. And that was the day, a special day, when heaven's plan met mankind's problem in Jesus Christ. And you know, and that is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And so now the question is for us, is just like this question, Do I have room for God? Do I have room for Jesus in my heart? The sketch was beautiful, man. I mean, started out, that's my life story. This image of Jesus was my childhood Jesus. I had room when I was small, but the world really took over. And when I was lost and alone, I needed to get rid of that stuff. And thank God for recovery. Thank God for a moment of clarity. Thank God for the inspiration to follow His plan for my life and not my own. And so this morning I read the daily reflection, and you know, here's God speaking to us. It's entitled Room for God. Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. That's Revelation 3:20. Some of the saddest words on earth are, we don't have room for you. Jesus knew the sound of those words. He was still in Mary's womb when the innkeeper said, we don't have room for you. And when he was hung on the cross, wasn't the message one of utter rejection? We don't have room for you in this world. Even today, Jesus is given the same treatment. He goes from heart to heart, asking if he might enter. Ever so often, he is welcome. Someone throws open the door of his or her heart and invites him to stay. And to that person, Jesus gives this great promise. In my Father's house are many rooms. What a delightful promise he makes us. We make room for him in our hearts, and he makes room for us in his house. That's today. That's what God's talking to us today, December 18th, 1 week before Christmas. That's a pretty special deal. So my question for you is there anybody here tonight who's ready to make room for Jesus in their heart? Let's hear it. Is there anybody here ready to make room for Jesus in their heart, you know? And like I'll say it again, if you're ready to talk to somebody more about it, if you're ready to share more about it, there's some people here that you could talk to. You know, you can reach over and touch the person next to you. You can come see Mac or Jeannie or any other church leaders, and, you know, we'll be happy to go more into this with you. But I am just so grateful that we are here together as a family. And remember, you don't have to walk to that rim alone. Lock arms with some brothers and sisters here who have been there and know there's a solution. And don't let fear put it off any longer, you know. I thank you, Mac, for, you know, I know Mac's working for God, because in recovery they always ask you to do some really hard stuff, you know. And then I come to the Rock Church, and Mac's always asking me to, but you know what? It's not about me or about hard things. It's about Jesus Christ. And I thank you for that. That's all I got. We have anything else going on, Mac? Are they coming up? All right. Awesome. Thank you, guys.